Welcome to Comedians Talking Baseball, our weekly MLB recap podcast for myself, comedian Joe Kilgallen, with comedian Mike Bryanstein. Break down the week that was, get into some history, and just kind of nerd out on some stats. Brido, how are you doing, my man?
You know, the season's over. the longest off season since 2014. Whatever. I don't have a horse in the race. Are you asking me to still be sad about the Cubs? Is that what you're doing?
No, I was just saying how are you, because it's a natural way to start a podcast. I know how you are. We've been keeping in touch. You know how I am. For those of you listening for the very first time, Brido and I are huge Cubs fans. We still talk honestly about other teams. We'll give you, you know, fair analysis. But we are Cubs homers. And the Cubs had a very crushing end to their season. And I think we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the other wild card game and probably a couple other things here on this edition of Comedians Talking Baseball. We'll do a little preview of the division series, because those all start tonight in the National League and then the American League tomorrow. And I was at the wild card game in Wrigley Field the other night, Tuesday night, Cubs-Rockies, in which the Rockies won 1-0 in what was an 11-hour game.
That was 2-1.
Or 2-1. I'm sorry. I want to say 1-0. You know, I'm thinking 1-0 because I just read a whole thing about 15 minutes ago about all the Cubs games in which they scored 1 or 0 runs.
Yeah, they were like the Orioles in that regard.
The Orioles were the most, and the Cubs were second. And the guy who tweeted it was basically doing something it's kind of irking me a little bit these days, where he was like, it's completely random. You know, it's just bad luck. What can you do? People are overblowing it. You know, teams aren't designed to score no runs one day and then put up 10 the next, which is like, yeah, no shit. They're not designed that way. Like, that was kind of needless. But this is where I think I'm breathing into the microphone there. I'm sorry about that. This is where it goes a little too far with some of the sabermetric stuff. You know me, I'm a big proponent of it. But what I love about it is the questioning. You have to question everything. That's where they came to the conclusion of, hey, actually, this is what leads to more runs scored, not, you know, what the old school thinking was. And actually, that doesn't matter. And actually, you know, stuff like that's why I love sabermetrics. But they're the people who are so addicted to them. Like, it's their religion, which is funny because it's science. It's supposed to be like you're supposed to question all the time. And he's just like, well, you know, it's not an indicator. I'm like, no, look, it's not an indicator. But when the season's over, ignore those projection stats. You know what I mean?
Because right.
It's happened. It's fucking happened. And I love FIP, and I love, you know, other stats like that. Like RBIs, we admit, yes, driving in runs is a good thing. But if a guy has 120 RBIs one season, you cannot bank on him doing that again next year because there's other factors that are beyond his control. Will his 1-2 hitter in front of him get on a lot of times? Will all this other stuff, you know what I mean? It's like, and wins and losses for a pitcher are dumb too, because like we famously use as a great example, because our guy Brian Kenny used as an example in the book Ahead of the Curve, which we both highly recommend. Earl Hershiser won 25 games in 1988. In 1989, yes. The very next season, he won 16 games. Guess what, though? In 89, he was better. He was better in every statistic except wins, because wins are not in your control as a pitcher. You can throw 8 shutout innings and lose, you know, or can you get a no decision?
You can throw a no hitter and lose.
Exactly. That's happened. So I don't know why, you know, I remember Russ Ortiz for the Braves won 22, 23 games in 2003, I believe, and had like a 4.5 ERA. Some dumb team, I'm sure, gave him a big contract and then thought, why did he win 22 games again? Oh, because
all right, you know, since this is science and we're always questioning things.
I just think once real quick, I didn't finish my last point. I have one more sentence and then take it away. My thing is this though. Those stats are great, but once the season is done, you have to look at the season, and you can, like, I know you could then say, well, you can't expect it to happen again next year. Sure, you can't expect it to happen again next year, but it fucking happened, and we need to look into why it happened to prevent it from happening again. If you just chalk it up to bad luck, I think that's kind of stupid, because especially when we watch the games, hey, you got to look at the numbers, but there's also somewhat of an eye test, and you have to see the games too.
Right.
Because we saw a terrible offense. And if you just look at the numbers going, well, the Cubs were 7th in OPS plus, and they were 4th in this and 5th in that, and yeah, blah, 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 I think they're fine. Don't do anything. Then you're an idiot. They clearly need to make some changes. Go ahead, Brido. I apologize. I'm amped, man. I'm freaking amped.
I feel you, man. Should a team in any sport with a playoff system, baseball, basketball, hockey, be able to go from being the best team in the league to out of the playoffs within 48 hours?
No. I feel like I kind of got you onto my way of thinking here a little bit, which shows everyone that when you have polite civil discourse, minds can be changed. I don't know if I'm changing mine completely, but think about the Red Sox Yankees situation right now. The Red Sox are facing the Yankees in round one. Now, if you're the Red Sox, like, don't you think Houston has an easier path to the ALCS? Houston versus Cleveland. Granted, Cleveland.
We're probably going to get into staff. That later. On paper, yeah, wins and losses, sure.
But my point is that, the Red Sox. You're right. We'll get into that more later. You're right. I'm kind of jumping way ahead.
Because I don't think you know who I'm taking in that series.
I don't think you do either. But to me, besides who you think's going to win, I just want to touch on this, and then we'll get way more into Cubs stuff, and then we could even talk about the AL wildcard game as well, and then we could do our little predictions. I don't want to do predictions yet. You're right. I got way ahead of.
But okay,
ahead of schedule. But my point is though that the Red Sox should be facing the 4 seed. They won 108 games. They should be facing the team with the worst record in the American League. They're not. They're facing the Yankees.
Right.
That to me seems like that's like unjust, right there. That because they're
well, it's not as that's not as flagrant to me, because like you could argue that the Astros won like 100 something games too. So maybe that's like not. I think 4 teams played game 163. Right?
Yes, the Rockies, Dodgers, Cubs, Brewers.
While the worst team that made it got to sit pretty with their shitty National League East title.
I know. It doesn't seem fair. It doesn't. They were at home on that Monday, resting, relaxing.
Listen, in 2015, the Cardinals, Pirates, and Cubs were the 3 best teams in the National League, I believe.
And in all of baseball.
And The Cubs and Pirates played in a 1-game thing and then went on to play the Cardinals in a best of 5. That to me made more sense because the Pirates and Cubs, like, they didn't win the same division as the Cardinals, so then they play each other for 1 game and then they play each other in a series. It just logically it made sense in my head. I've said a billion times on this podcast, hey, win your division.
Yes, you have.
At least 2 of those 2 teams got a chance to play in a best of 5.
Yeah, and the fact that they were all in the same division worked out in a weird, magically lucky way.
Right.
In which when the Cubs won, it's like, okay, the Cubs were the champions of the Central in that sense.
Just like if the Rays had come back and miraculously like taken out the A's and played the Yankees last night to then go on to play the Red Sox, I'd almost be like, okay, it's a battle for the East, whatever. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I hear you.
I just think if you have the second best record in the fucking league, that you don't have a chance in a 5-game series. And if you're like, well, their chance was that 13 inning game where they lost by a run, fuck you.
I agree. You know, I've been a proponent of this in other sports. I almost think they could figure out a way to balance the schedule as much as possible. I'm sure they could do this where forget divisions, top 5 seeds, or even, hey, you know, they're talking about expansion. If they add 2 more teams to each league or whatever, if they go from 30 to 32 or 1 team to each league, then top 6 make it. I guess you couldn't do well. I guess if you did top 6, no, to keep it the way it is, 5 is fine. Have the 4 versus 5 play each other to see who's going to face the 1, and then the 2 versus 3 goes. That just seems better to me. I feel like it sucks that the Cleveland Indians, who did they even win 90 games?
I think they did, yeah.
But barely, what, 91?
I'm not sure. The Rays won 90, and the top 5 teams made it. There's nobody who got screwed by the system,
okay. Yeah, I know that, but
it would have been the same teams, but the Indians would have been the 5, I believe.
Okay. But the Indians would have been the 5, which means the Yankees wouldn't have had to have that 1 game. I mean, granted they won, so I'm sure they don't care now, But I always felt bad for the Pirates in 2015. They won 98 games. They had the second best record in all of baseball. That is hard to do. And then they ran into Jake Arrieta in a one-game playoff, and that was that.
I mean, you play 162 games over 6 months.
You could argue baseball has the one of the worst playoff systems in the sense that basketball and hockey, you play 82 games in each of those sports, respectively. I don't get to use respectively too often, so I'm glad I used it there in the right context. And their first round is a best of seven. Basketball used to do a best of five, which I kind of wish they still did because the first round is
Isn't that all based on like Dikembe like holding the ball on the court and like the Nuggets upset somebody?
Yeah, I remember there was some upset where they then said we got to do a best of seven. Now I believe you're correct on that, and it's more games, but also it's a better representation of what you just went through. It's a best of seven if you went through 82 games. Baseball, you go through 162, and then you do a best of five for the first round. And then if you're a wild card, it's a do or die, which we both have talked about. They wanted to recreate that great stretch that, what was that, like 2011?
I think it was 11.
Where there was those tiebreaker games. And yeah, they're exciting. I get that. It's cool, but maybe I'm not that upset with the wild card one and done. But it definitely does seem unfair.
It seems weird that you can go from the best team in your league to out. Like
in 48 hours?
Yeah. I mean, granted, no team should have to spend 2 days in a row with people doing the doggy pile on their home field. It's insane.
That was rough.
Someone, I think last show I was just like, well, God, man, if they have to play 163 and lose the wild card, I feel real bad for that fucking team. And then it ended up being my team.
Yeah.
My team was the only team that happened to.
And the Rockies, you got to give them some credit. They went three time zones over, and the Cubs pitching was great. I mean, there's some positives we could take away from this Cubs team. They won 95 games, so part of you was like, all right, you don't want to panic too much. They overcame a lot of adversity. Their closer missed the entire second half in Brandon Morrow. Their other closer got hurt with a month to go. And what a courageous, gutsy performance. He came back after about 2.5 weeks, I feel like. So maybe it wasn't even a full month he was out. 3 weeks, maybe. And pitched one great inning in extras
best, in the wild card game. Best bullpen ERA in the National League.
Yes. There's a couple things I would do to tweak the bullpen a little bit there. You know, I'd feel more comfortable that another high strikeout guy. And I'm sure that's what they'll probably look to do. Jesse Chavez said today, who was an absolute steal of a trade, came over from Texas with the Cubs in 39 innings, struck out 42 guys, only walked five, had like a 1.16 ERA, but here's more for you, a 2.32 FIP, which is great. And it was just fantastic. He said today that if he's not a Cub next year, he's done, meaning he's probably just going to retire. So I like our odds of bringing that guy back.
Yeah.
Theo said they'll exercise Strope's option. And yeah, so they had to overcome a lot of things. They made some great in-house pickups.
42 games in 43 days.
Yeah, that was another thing that I feel like you throw that in there. That's a great reason why the team really ran out of gas offensively down the stretch.
I don't know who that was in a Chris Bryant uniform.
He didn't look like himself, right? I still feel like he should probably get his shoulder more thoroughly looked at, get like a scope or something, because even his swing looked not like himself.
Oh my God. He was like a mile behind like a 94 mile an hour fastball.
I know. And this is a guy I remember.
They ran on him in the outfield because they were like, look at that shit.
Yeah. I remember that dude would turn on a 98 mile an hour fastball and hit off the video board. He took Thor and DeGrom off the video board.
The best fastball hitter in baseball can't hit a 94.
I know.
Right down the middle. I know that Freeland is a beast. I know that. But that pause, ooh, that was ugly. He's good, man. He's a second-year player.
He's very good. He's very good. He was drafted in 2014, I believe, mid-round. First-round pick. I think maybe it was like the 10th or 11th pick. So, yeah, he was a great – he's their best pitcher.
Well, you could say Herman Marquez. That staff, dude, they have two second-year pitchers on the Rockies that, like, I am surprised that people are so hyped about their bullpen. I think they're two best pitchers are probably the best two pitchers in the National League in the postseason, maybe Fulton Avich, but they're good.
They're very good. I mean, I like their odds against the Brewers. Again, we'll save this for later. I'm just hinting at because I think Miller Park is a very hitter-friendly park, and we know that Coors, their players have bad splits on the road. They're very, like, eh, you know, team. I mean, not amp, but, like, they're not – it's not sexy.
Story comes back down to a human level. Arenado still has, like, weighted runs plus, like, weighted runs created plus, still is elite. But back down, but not like he is at home.
No, it's a different. If he was, I don't know. I just feel he's obviously that glove plays in any
boy,
condition,
man. Just any.
He robbed
ball.
Brian of a hit actually. Brian hit a ball in the 11th that I thought was a single off the bat, and then he made a diving stop.
They had some great defensive plays and one horrible defensive play.
Yeah, the right fielder dropped a Bryant ball.
Dahl
dropped,
who's been
just overran it.
Dahl, who's been red hot, just looking goofy out there in right.
That's the thing, too. As a Cubs fan, we have to be honest with ourselves. Even if we win the wild card game, I know it's the playoffs and anything can happen, which is true. You've seen people limp in and come out victorious. You've seen people go in red hot and get swept.
ask the Nationals if anything can happen.
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, but I still – you didn't feel confident that we were going to beat the Brewers. I mean, although the thing with the Cubs versus the Brewers, I still think that was what kept the National League – interesting to me was that there was no clear runaway, where the American League was just so top heavy and dominant. You're like, any one of these three teams could do it. But in the National League, you're like, hey, I think the Dodgers could beat this team, and I think the Brewers could beat that team, and I think the Cubs, if everything's clicking, could beat anybody. Javier Baez in the post game, you know, in the locker room, they're interviewing people, and a lot of people were distraught. I mean, I think they said Bryant and Wilson Contreras both looked like they're in tears, and Javier Baez said that the team never came together. And there was a little loss in translation thing there that Theo clarified, which I knew what he meant, but some people are like, what does he mean by that? You know, people always look to.
He means that they didn't click all at the same time.
Well, when you think about it, though, in the first half of the season, the offense was very good. They were right up there in OPS. They were like first or second in OPS. They were averaging a little over 5 runs a game, which is very good. The offense was not a concern at all in the first half. It was the starting pitching was terrible in the first half.
Yes.
The only one who had decent numbers was Lester, and those weren't even decent on the peripheral end because the FIP was very high and some other stats were, you know, the strikeout rate was down and everything like that. And did a ghost just creak into your house, buddy?
That's my door.
Oh, nice, man. You should get some WD-40 on that, mother. And
or not open it like I'm sneaking into a bank.
Yeah, you're really real cat burglar-like. And so the starting pitching was bad. And then in the second half, the starting pitching was great, especially after Cole Hamels joined. And then the offense went bad. So, yeah, they never really clicked, which is weird to say for a 95-win team. They had a lot of times where they just had – they eked out some wins where you were – when looking back, you're like, oh, wow. But
I guess
like
we are spoiled rotten with a 95-win team with a – very good division. The Pirates are good. Let's talk. I mean, like, what are we talking
about?
The
Reds have a great offense. They just have no pitching or bullpen.
Right.
They do. They've got hitters that scare the shit out of you, the Reds.
Yeah. And then, like, I think the Pirates staff was one of the best of the second half. The Reds, obviously, you don't want that team to get pitching because, holy shit, they have maybe the best division in all of baseball. And so it's like a lot of this stuff, like teams tanking and whatever else. Like, look at the Indians. Were they ever not going to win that fucking division?
No, they're the only team over 500. I checked. They won 91 games, only one more than the third place Tampa Rays of the AL East. And, you know, just sometimes I think of stuff like that where I was like, wow, like teams that win 97 games are after one day. But because Cleveland plays in a shitty time zone, they get to advance past that, you know. It's one of those things where you could complain all day, but you're right. This is the system that you operate within, and you know, it never affected the Cubs before, I guess. I know we shouldn't react emotionally because it just happened, and that's why I leave that stuff to the Cubs front office, which
it would be
Cubs fan.
Yeah, it would be dishonest for me to.
Well, we're fans, okay? And we're supposed to act with emotion. It's okay for us to act with emotion. This is what kind of is part of being a fan. And it is actually kind of fun when you think about it. But the Theo Epstein had a press conference. It's the typical end of the year press conference. That is the earliest they've had in a long time for the Cubs. And if you're a Cubs fan, or not even a Cubs, if you're a baseball fan, which I imagine you're listening to this podcast, or if you're just a fan of a leader, because my God, is that dude a leader. He owned up to all the mistakes that were on his end, and he took the blame for everything, really. Even the mistakes that weren't, everything's weren't his fault. The buck stopped with him. And he was honest and candid with everything, with every question. I thought he handled the news about Edison Russell getting suspended for 40 games wonderfully. There was just a lot of things that you're like, you know what? After listening to that, I feel very confident that the 2019 Cubs are going to be a force to reckon with. Not to say that the 2018 Cubs weren't, because again, they won 95 games, but it's up to us. We're supposed to get a little emotional, and that's okay. But if you're a fan of that kind of thing, highly check out watching that. It's probably on YouTube now. I was watching on Facebook, NBC Sports Chicago's Facebook page. Here's where I'm looking at the offense. And I know we're trying to do the whole, oh, let's not freak out thing. Look at the stats of the players. Rizzo ended up, after a terrible first month, having a pretty good season. But still.
Rizzo was great in the
second half. He was fantastic. So I'm not going to look at him, even though his slugging percentage was the lowest it's been in 3 or 4 years. You take away the first month, his slugging percentage is right where it's supposed to be. And Rizzo's great. So Javier Baez, unbelievable season. Fantastic. Yes. MVP conversation. And he played 160 games. That dude was there. You know he wasn't playing 100% of times, because we saw how he plays. When you play balls out like that guy, you know you're not 100% at the end of the year. He's dinged up a little bit, but he's still there. Got the big hit in the wild card game. But even he looked tired. No excuses. Chris Bryant, we just talked about, was not Chris Bryant. Ben Zobrist, great year. Nice bounce back year. I think in 2017 he said he had a banged up wrist and just never felt the same with the swing. Got healthy in the offseason. Wonderful season out of him. Played pretty decent defense all around and batted .300, which is nice, you know, even though we're not the biggest batting average guys, that's still a cool number. Anyhow, and then so you got those three. Then you could say Schwarber improved from last year, but still, like, you're a little disappointed. I don't care about his average being, what, 239, 240. I just care about the inconsistency with him, because Schwarber would have a hot month and then a cold month, and it's kind of this back and forth. And in the second half, his OPS went down about 40 points, because he was about 865 OPS at the All-Star break. And you could even have made a case that he should have been an All-Star.
I thought he was the best available left fielder in the National League at the All-Star break.
And he finished with a 3.2 WAR. So
That's solid.
Very solid. That is, you know, that's good. I mean, we put 4 WAR as All-Star level. So 3.2 is right there, you know. And then after that, it's a really ugly look at things. I mean, Contreras defensively still had a very good season, but offensively, especially in the second half, was terrible. Wilson Contreras,
I think that his heart is so big that, I mean, he looked like he wanted to will that team to a victory on his own, sprinting to first to back up like a ground ball.
Oh man, I love that guy. You love him. He's a guy. He's on my. I have really 4 players on the offensive side that are untouchable if I'm running the show: Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, and Contreras. Even though Contreras had a bad year, Schwarber I love, but I'm at the point where I'm not, like, you know, I just think that you could trade him. I wouldn't want to, because I still believe in him. And again, a 3.2 WAR player was not the problem this year. And but yeah, with Wilson Contreras, dude, he was doing bat flips for walks to try to get the team pumped. Like, that's a guy you want on your team.
yeah.
And then you look at Alberto Moro Jr., who had a really nice first half. He's not a guy who's ever going to have a high on base percentage, but you expect him to hit between 290 and 310. I think he's a guy that you like projects out to be a 300 hitter with like maybe closer to a 335, 340 on base percentage with gold glove defense. There's a lot of value in that. And he disappeared in the second half. I don't know if you want to chalk that up to the fact that he got in his head where, oh, I just had 2 bad games in a row. Now Ian Happ is going to take my position for 5 days. You know, I think that does play on young players, because as much as we brag about the Cubs' depth, young players aren't good at not knowing when they're going to play. Typically, you bring a young guy up and they're an everyday player. It's veterans who've been around. It's your John Jays of the world. your right. Jordy Mercers of the world. I'm trying to think of like guys who aren't in the Cubs who are like your prototypical bench player. Your Austin Jackson, Parra, guys who just know, okay, I'm a bench guy. Curtis Granderson filled in that role with the Brewers toward the end, where I'm going to come off the bench, try to give some energy, and then I'll spot start a few times. Tommy La Stella is the Cubs' only true bench player.
Right.
In the Cubs' most successful season, they had three true bench players in David Ross, La Stella, and Coughlin. I think you need guys who know their roles. When you have these young guys like Ian Happ and Almora and Schwarber to an extent, and because he didn't play every day either. He did mostly.
Bodie,
another great example. When they get in there, especially toward the end of the season, when it's time to shine, they get in their head. And, you know, you and I are woke dudes. So we push, hey, mental health is something that, you know, everybody should probably see a therapist. And if you got problems in your head, deal with them. Baseball players got a lot of problems. It's a long season. It's mental. It's a mental game more than any other sport. That's why I hate it when people are like, they got to practice harder. Oh, that's, you think that's what it is? Really? This isn't fucking a guy who can't shoot free throws. Practicing harder, they know how to swing the bat.
There's something that's got to be mentally insane, fatiguing, to play 30 games in a row. Rizzo's wearing his jersey to
he wore Washington. The whole uniform, cup included, I've been told.
cup included. No,
you can't wear a
yeah.
cup on a wow. flight. That'd be, I don't know. Hey, Riz, I don't know if that's true, man, but I don't know why I'm saying it to him like he's listening to this podcast. He might. Hey, it's the offseason's begun. He could be playing comedians talking baseball on the links. Yeah, you're right. There's something that it takes the toll. And I was alluding to the mental health thing because the Cubs mental health guy, who was like their mental skills coach, they call it, which Theo even hinted at during the press conference. He brought up maybe some guys had just, you know, the mental aspect of the game, they just weren't as sharp with, and it was getting to them. And they're putting too much pressure on themselves and stuff like that. But the Cubs had like this guru that everyone loved who died unexpectedly in July. And the Cubs had a good first half offense, a bad second half offense. I'm not equating this all to one guy, of course, but when something unexplained, like 95 wins to being out in 48 hours happens, you have to look at every possible angle and go, what happened here?
You ever watch the show Billions on Showtime?
I have not. I've heard good things, though.
That they got a mental health expert. That's pretty much the show is really about her, if you really think about
it. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny, though, because all the tough guys I know who like these shows don't realize what those shows are trying to tell you. Like The Sopranos, half the show is him sitting in an office talking about his problems with a therapist. Like, you know, so I don't know why people are still like, oh, fuck that shit. You got problems? Shake it off, dude. No, man. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that people can't handle. So you need help.
I had a book when I played, The Mental Game of Baseball. It was a lot about visualization and that sort of thing. Like, it actually really helped.
No, visualization's not a joke. I read a whole thing about they had a basketball team where they broke them into two groups to do free throws. And the one group, they brought them into a room and they just meditated visualizing making their free throws. They just all, you know, sat on the ground. They played some, you know, nice chilled out music, some Anya or whatever that one dude is, I think. And they just.
Anya's a woman?
Anya, there we go.
I don't know.
The one that's sail away, you know, that dude. And, that. And they just
some real smooth jams.
Yeah, some just real light sounds of the ocean, probably. And they just visualized. And then on the other side, they had the guys actually shooting free throws, practicing. The dudes who just sat there visualizing had the higher percentage, like almost significantly too. Like 75 to 59 or something. As a team, I'm talking. You know, like they broke them into groups of like seven.
All the physical ability in the world with no head gets you. A bunch of Yasiel Puigs.
Yeah, I mean, how many – Rick Ankiels. There's been so many people. That's why I always get annoyed where
– John Lester.
I'll talk about how great someone was in this era, and they go, oh, come on, man. Like, the guys today's game are just such better athletes. Like, I'm not talking about athletes. I'm talking about players. You know what I mean? Who's the better player? Because Tom Brady is probably – there's 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL. When it comes to athleticism, I'd probably rank Tom Brady 28th, 29th, maybe 30th. He is not. You ever see Tom Brady shirtless? He's got no muscle. I mean, he's got decent arms, but he's just a good player. He's smart. He knows what he's doing. Like, you're good at something. You don't have to be a great like, there are great athletes who aren't the best players, was what I was trying
to get. If Tom Brady played in the 60s, like, and did the same shit, we'd all look at him like there's no fucking way he'd do it.
Yeah, but I bet Tom Brady and Johnny Unitas side by side are not much different body type, you know? Or Joe Montana. I have a Joe Montana bobblehead I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, what did Brady and like Peyton Manning do on 225 bench in the
Probably shit. But I just know there's a lot of people who are just like, who's the better athlete and all that. But I think the mental side, you're right. If you have just all athletes who don't know how to control their emotions or don't know how to mentally prepare for the grind of a 162-game season. And again, we're not coddling these athletes, everybody, because I know there's someone, maybe there's someone listening who's like, I work double shifts, manual labor. Fuck these guys. And I get that. That's, you're right. But mental drain, I'm with a baby and a dog all day for 12 hours a day. Then I go out and do comedy. Comedy is easy. It's, which is not really, we know it's not, it's hard. But stand up is like a vacation compared to what I do during the day. Because, and my son's awesome. He's a real chilled out baby. He's happy most of the time. So he's not like fussy at all. So I got it pretty easy. But try getting a 1.5-year-old dressed. Stuff like
that. Are you
that,
sure
that's dude.
Are you sure that's your baby? I don't want
to
get into
that. No, you know what? He is starting to show some signs of a temper, to be honest with you. He couldn't get this train thing working and he basically threw it across the room. And my wife looked right at me like, that is so you. And I'm like, I go, it makes sense. Fuck that train. I would have thrown it across the room too. My one friend had the best comment when we had, I saw it in like Facebook memories not that long ago, when we made the announcement, oh, you know, we're expecting our first baby and all that. And we did a whole Cubs theme, of course. My one buddy, who's my oldest friend in the world, who's on my other podcast, Killgallons Pub, everybody. You should check that out. My friend Michael Pecco. I've literally known him since birth. We grew up in Chicago in apartment buildings next to each other. And he commented, that child's going to need anger management in the womb, which I thought was a hilarious line. And all my comedian friends, I told them, I go, I've known that guy since birth. So it's not like something that, you know, you guys, it's not new. It's got a bad temper, everybody. I'm trying to control that shit. And the wild card game did not help, especially since I sat next to the worst guy. I sat next to this fan who literally was doing like commentary. I was just supposed to be like, are you auditioning for something right now? Why is it every time there's a pop-up, you have to go pop up to the second baseman? Here we go. Like, he was one of those fans that I could tell got really into it recently, but still doesn't know baseball. Because when you know baseball, when a hitter goes down 0-1, you don't freak out about it.
I don't understand the passionate fans who don't know anything about the sport.
I don't get it either. I mean, it's
one of the weirdest fucking things to me.
I could tell they didn't play it growing up, too. When you freak out about the count, you could tell. Because that's a very little league parent thing when the kid goes down 0-1.
Yeah, don't strike out.
The kid goes down 0-1. They're like, come on, Mikey, you saw that. You saw it. Now it's like, yeah, I saw it. It looked a little outside. He called it strike one. I know I could easily get a hit 0-2 even. Chill the fuck out. You don't react to every pitch. Imagine if major league players were reacting the way 9-year-olds react. It'd be the most annoying sport ever. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, dude. I cut you off, though. I feel bad.
No, you're totally good. I have relatives who are huge Cubs fans, but just kind of are learning the sport because the Cubs got good.
That's understandable.
Fielding those text messages is sometimes a chore.
Oh, I bet.
Or friends who I was just like, I didn't know you were a huge Cubs fan, sending text messages, and it's just like, how do you watch the games in order to text me as much as you do, but don't understand things? Baseball is one of those sports that I just want people to understand a little bit better than they do. It's like when they go to like a Trump rally, and bear with me, and they ask like Trump fans, like, what do you think about his child separation policy? And they're like, what? And then, like, the whole joke is, what a bunch of fucking idiots. They went to a Trump rally, and they love him, and they don't even know what he's doing. Okay, I don't like those people either. But guess what? Go outside Dodger Stadium, any stadium, and go, what do you think about the Cubs' bullpen usage? They're going to go, what?
Exactly. And I think we could learn a lesson from both. I think anything that's really popular, it's going to attract people. And they might not be that informed because we forget the average you and I are passionate individuals. I think when you go into stand-up comedy, you have to have some sort of like obsession trait in your brain that when you get in,
you have to care about things enough to talk about
that,
them in front of people.
That's a huge component of it. Yes. The average person though, I think just works their job, hangs out with some friends on weekends, does that, has their TV shows they watch, and then just kind of goes through the motions. I feel, you know, sometimes it bums me out.
Seems easier.
Yeah, it does. I think a lot of them are kind of, you know, ignorance is bliss is a true thing. And again, being ignorant is That doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means you lack a little understanding on it. And I think that's just how that goes in a way where I know, I'll give you an example. And I'm very lucky it didn't go, because I've thought about this since then with how I approach things. And it doesn't always work out. My wife, I took her to her first ever baseball game. You know, we started day in high school, everybody. And broke up a little bit there in the middle, but got back to, you know, got a nice little classic American love story in a weird way. And I guess not classic because people don't marry high school sweethearts anymore. But I always throw in the, hey, we were broken up for a little bit there, because everyone was same not the same person thing, but like, you guys have been together since high school and everything's been perfect since then. No, because I don't want to make people think that everything is sunshine and rainbows.
What grade?
We started dating junior year of high school. We're engaged in our early 20s, broke that off. Your parents did that? Cool.
My parents, juniors.
That's dope. Yeah. I mean, look, I love my wife. So I'm super happy. Everything's great. Got a hell of a great family situation going on right now. But I don't like to like make, you know, people be like, oh, wow, this weird dating someone since high school, as if like, you know, no, we had a little bit of time apart, because I think that's important as adults to, you know, you got to figure out who you are too. So if you're dating your high school sweetheart out there and you break up, don't act, if you don't get back together, that's fine. It was probably not for the best, but if you do get back together, it's meant to be and all that shit. Anyway, I don't know why I was clarifying. Who knows? I got into a conversation with someone over the weekend where they were just,
I think,
like,
you feel.
No, it's only because twice in the last week or two, people were like, some relationship stuff came about and I started talking and they go, what do you know? It's been easy for you. High school sweetheart, come on. And I'm like, no, it wasn't easy. We broke up in between and people were like, oh, I didn't even know that. And then I had to tell my story. But anyway, I don't know why I brought it up. But I took her to a game in high school.
Ooh, that's a real sore spot for you, because you want to feel like, you know, you knew your options and you want to feel like you didn't just take the first thing that came along. Well, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, because it almost makes people think. I know a lot of people when they look at relationships where they go, they've been together since high school. What idiots. You know, oh, you're going to marry the first person that touched your dick. Like, you know, that kind of old school mentality, you know what I mean? I just want people to, I don't want people thinking just because you've been in a long relationship doesn't mean you can't help people with relationship advice. And I didn't even want it to. They're just talking about it in front of me. And I was like, nah, hold on. Here's what it is. And they were like, well, easy for you to say. You know, it's.
Was the person single that said that to you?
They were just getting out of something. So kind of, yeah.
They're a hater.
They're upset, and they projected their shit onto me. That's what happened. So I took her to a game, and it was her first ever Cubs game. And she out loud at one point, because there was a balk, out loud asked, what's a balk? And I don't know what came over me. I was just kind of like embarrassed in a way where I was like, first of all, how do you not know that? I think I was basically like that. And then I'm like, don't say that shit out loud, because everyone around here is going to think you're a fucking idiot. You know, and
that's so funny. My wife just said, what is a balk? And I said, oh, it's stupid, they shouldn't even do it.
No, really? Well, see, that's, you're more mature than I was at 18 or 17, however the old I was.
I fucking pitched in an all-star game when I was 13 or an AAU game, and I got called for, like, we had a balk happy fucking umpire. I wanted to murder this adult person when I was 13 years old.
Oh, God, this is the worst people. The old guy who's just living vicariously through young people and still taking it seriously, like when you have to remind them, hey, these are kids playing, dickhead. You know what I mean?
Balk. Yes, I'm deceiving the runner, you piece of trash.
I remember there being a coach who wore the uniform pants, too. This is at, like, Little League level. And I'm like, man, what a sad sack. Anyhow, I then realized later in life, I'm like, man, I'm lucky that my wife does love baseball and she got really into it. I remember a couple years later, we were at a Cubs Cardinals game and I went to the bathroom real quick and I came back. My wife was like, you see that bitch right there? Like some woman Cardinals fan, she wanted to fight her. And I was like, this is great. I love it. You know, but I could have, you know, I'm lucky that she was cool. And my wife's very, you know, opposites attract in a lot of ways because she's very chill and she gets me. When I get mad, she's just like, oh, this will blow over in 8 seconds, you know. It's like an earthquake, you know. You just got to be like, oh, it's a little shaky. It's, and well, not like an earthquake. I mean, like the earthquakes I lived in LA, because when I was in LA, you've been there, there's always that little one where you're like, was that an earthquake? I'm not really sure. It was so quick. That's what I mean. It goes by so quick. It's not, I'm not tearing houses down. Yeah.
Isn't she?
You have to have extreme patience.
It makes sense.
To be a nurse.
She's been caring for a sick person since high school.
Yeah, it's a pretty natural transition for her. Her patients are easy. And I luckily I explained, hey, sorry about, like, I wasn't like, I didn't say it in a way where I was like yelling, but I was more like, are you kidding me right now? I was dickish enough where I later realized, man, I could have turned her off to baseball completely. And
or to you.
Or but to me, it was more important baseball. I would have been sad if, say, we broke up, if I would have ran into her months down the road and we're talking and I was like, oh, you know, I was at the Cubs game last night. And she's like, oh, you know what's funny? I've hated baseball since that day. I would have felt worse than if we broke up.
How old
were you?
That's
how much
I
love baseball. I don't want anyone to hate it. How old was I? I think we were far enough into the relationship where I could be like, are you kidding me right now? So I was probably dating for, I was probably 17 or 18. Maybe I was going on 18.
Okay.
Well, I know because we were, so I grew up off of Irving Park Road, which for those people who aren't Chicagoans is 4 blocks north of Addison. So I would often get like, I was like a block from Irving, block or two. And I would, my parents still live right over there. Right? Don't go trying to stalk them now, you creeps out there on the internet. And
where do you live? By that Arby's?
No, I do not live by the Arby's. Arby's, that's way west. That's, well, I mean, I was pretty far west, but that's
Irving and what?
That's Irving and Harlem. Where was I? I don't want to tell the intersection because people are Irving and like Milwaukee and Cicero, Six Corners.
Irving Park and Cicero, like my joke?
Yes, that's why I always love that joke. I'm not kidding you. I think I even told you that when I first met you. I go, I actually grew up right there. I think I'm still living. Wow. I was still living with my parents when I started stand up. So I was probably telling you, yeah, I live a few blocks from where your fictitious joke takes place.
Were you one of the people that, like, actually there's not a karate place? And I was like, I know, it's just funny to sit. To
no, yell. I think you probably got it because there used to be a commercial for a store called Hats Plus, and Hats Plus was at Irving Park in Cicero.
I drove.
And Hats Plus is one of the best hats, so Scottie Pippen would buy his hats there.
I drove from about O'Hare back to Irving Park in Ashland every day.
So you know where Portage Park is?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I went to grade school, and that's the park I played baseball at. I grew up right there, basically. So we would cross. She always remembers this. She brings it up still because I almost got us killed. The Irving Park bus came, and I don't think they're doing anymore. There was a stretch where there was an Irving Park Express where it would, like, skip so many stops and it would be by my house. I remember if you got that, you were like, oh my god, instead of it being 30 minutes to Clark, it'd be like 15 minutes, you know. So it was like, that's a big deal. So I remember seeing it, the x80, the x in front of it, Irving Park, and I was like, shit. And there was like a green light and I basically, come on, let's go. And we almost got hit by like several cars. It was bad. And and she still brings it up. I'm like, you have no idea how big this was, because sometimes I'd walk the 5-6 blocks down Addison, but for the most part I'd just take Irving to Clark and then walk down to Wrigley anyway, though. But it was that same game where I kind of gave her a hard time for knowing what a balk was. But when you think about it, though, if I'm lucky she wasn't turned off to the sport altogether. And so I equate it to other people in life. When they don't know things, it's the right response isn't be like, figure it out, you fucking idiot. Because then they're not going to ever turn around to it. Nobody responds well to that. And that was, you reminded me of that when we were talking about the people who don't know baseball. But this guy, though, had an arrogance about him. Because every now and then I wasn't being a dick, but every now and then I'd say, oh, actually, you know, I guess you have to say actually. I was mansplaining another man, everybody. And and he was just, he would be like, he's going to get a first ball fastball. Everyone knows he loves first ball fastballs. In my head, I'm like, if everyone knows he loves first ball fastballs, he's not going to get a fucking first ball fastball. It's a wild card game, dude. And he didn't get a first ball fastball. I remember just like, and he was so negative. He was just like, game's over. Every time the Rockies got a runner on base, he'd be like, here we go, here we go. Here we go again. And I'm just like, why are you here? Why are you a Cubs fan?
There's nothing worse than a know-it-all fan who's negative.
And doesn't know.
Right.
Right? That's like the worst combo.
Yeah, a phony know-it-all who's negative.
Yeah, good Lord. All right, man, let's get back to the task at hand, though. Let me ask you this.
My person in question sent me a list of the Cubs slash lines, like a photo text, and said, you can't win with stats like these. And I was like, or you can win 95 fucking games.
It's scary to think if the stats were where they should have been or where you project them to be, what would they have won, 105? We lost the division by one game. Chris Bryant missed 59 or 60 games, I think. And we lost the division by one. If Bryant plays half those games, you figure we win by 4 or 5.
If everyone's healthy and they click it the way that they're supposed to, yeah, 110, fucking whatever.
Yeah, 110, I think, is an actual decent projection. I think the thing that Theo said, and again, this press conference was fantastic. He said that we have guys who are better at 22 and 23 than they are at 24 and 25, and that's not good. He goes, we have guys who are regressing when they should be hitting their best seasons.
Yes.
And I'm sure he, you know, Chris Bryant, I don't think he was quite talking about because of the injury.
Addison, he's talking about Addison.
He's talking about Addison for sure. He's probably talking about
Schwarber.
Schwarber, Contreras, I guarantee. Because Contreras last year was unbelievably good.
Right.
Unbelievably good. And I think he's talking about, Schwarber. Schwarber, Contreras, Addison are definitely the guys he's talking about.
He's not talking about, because he's not talking about Javi.
No, Javi was the one shining spotlight of, like, the one saving grace of the season. I mean, obviously, Rizzo was Rizzo, because we minus that first month and his numbers are where they are. He would have had, he probably finished with like a 900 OPS if you minus that first month. And he's, you know, he's a great team leader and everything, you know, he's the main ingredient. We love him. And then after that, you know, that's why they had to make the move for Daniel Murphy, that I know a lot of people were upset about. And granted, they should be. I get that. He's not a good dude. Or, you know, I mean, you could be a good dude, but he's got very archaic worldviews, and that's not good. So, you know, it was very stressful in that situation. We had Dio's in-season moves were great. They all paid dividends. Jesse Chavez, Cole Hamels, Daniel Murphy for a stretch there. And even though I think he just kind of got old and got bad toward the end there. I want to ask you this, though. Let's wrap this part of the conversation up, and then we can talk about a couple other things and make some predictions here. And then throughout the weeks, I started thinking about what other content are we going to give throughout the playoffs. I would like to, next week, look at all the players. We could do like our, maybe within the next 2 weeks, maybe not next week for sure because we don't know what's going on. We could do a memorandum thing where we look at the players who have retired. You got your Victor Martinez. He's not coming back. Mm-hmm. David Wright. A few. You know what I just realized? Ichiro is going to play in a major league game for the Mariners next year.
Wow.
Did you hear that announcement?
No.
We could talk about that. I don't like it.
He said he wanted to play until he was 50 or something, didn't he?
So you know what he's doing, though? He's backing up his timeline to go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That part's annoying. But anyway, it doesn't matter, though. So,
so is Justin Verlander.
Verlander's still playing at a high level and great. What the hell are you? That was a terrible comparison.
I'm being a dick.
I know. It's funny. I mean, Ichiro's playing one game next year. You know what I mean?
So
if he was still
Mike...
a six war pitcher, I'd be okay with it.
So is Mike Trout.
Yeah, Mike Trout is really delaying the inevitable here. Just call it a year, man. Call it a career, I mean. All right. What would you do? You're the Cubs.
You didn't put Joe Mauer in that conversation.
Joe Mauer, I know. Well, we're saving it. We're gonna do a whole podcast about these because I still want to continue doing this. I think we'll take a good 2 to 3 weeks off, probably around the holidays. But you know, I still want to entertain our listeners that we've got great momentum going into 2019. Because like I said, we started this up again week one of the season, and we didn't have a spring training as a podcast. This year, we're going to stay fresh in the offseason.
We're going to play some long catch.
And next year, we're taking this podcast to new heights.
I'm coming in 25 pounds of muscle heavier in the offseason.
You and I are going to make a vision board for 2019 goals. And that's what's going to happen.
It's got Manny Machado in blue and red.
Yeah. So though that's where I was going to hint at right now then. We'll talk about all the players, okay. Joe Mauer and all those guys. We'll do a whole podcast. You and I could do a whole podcast of baseball-type history stuff. You know that. So we'll save those conversations for a later date, a date to be named later. And so with the Cubs, so they're the first off the, I mean, we'll do a little, one day we'll break down all the other teams and what we think they could do in their off seasons. But right now the Cubs are our team and they're the most recent eliminated in Oakland we could get to soon as well. The Cubs are going to have, they're going to have money to spend. They're going to have a new TV deal. The Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer were really smart at the front office, how they structured contracts. Jason Hayward made $28 million this year. Next year, he goes down to 20. That's an $8 million cut. Yu Darvish, $25 million this year. He's going down to $20 million. That's a $5 million cut. Ben Zobrist was going from $16 million this year to $12 million. All of these players, that they structured their contracts specifically for this offseason, knowing who was going to be available, or they had their make less money. It was genius in so many ways. I didn't even realize it because I was curious about the Cubs' payroll going into this offseason. I looked at it. They're healthy. They're in good shape. It's going to be high. They'll probably go over the Lux tax, but again, because they were under it last year, it's not that big a penalty. It's, you know, it doesn't hurt you as badly because they are a major market team. What do you do? What is your offseason plan? Give it to me within, you know, try to make keep it under a minute, and then I'll give you mine as well.
Okay, I would like another bat in the infield. So
give me your pick, and then give me your lineup for next year.
I want Manny Machado.
Okay, give me your 1 through 9 or 1 through 8.
1 through 8, like including pitcher. Who do I want as a
pitcher?
No,
1 through 8 is your position. I'd say 1 through 9 if I'm that pitcher. We could then do the rotation next, but just real quickly, who do you got? First base, just Rizzo.
Hold on, man. 1 is pitcher, 2 is catcher. So 1 through blah, blah, blah.
1 through okay. 8 in the fucking batting order, dude.
Oh, you want me to give you a batting order?
Yeah, give me your 1 through 8.
That's so now I need to think of a lineup in my head strategically. Okay, catcher. Okay. Catcher is Wilson Contreras.
No, don't even do that. Don't even do that. Here, I'll give an example. I'll go, and then you can react off of me since I'm the one that's doing a terrible job navigating this part of the podcast. Okay, leading off. I don't know for sure now. I'm putting myself in the here. I'll do it this way. I'm okay with Manny Machado or Harper, either one, I'm ecstatic for. In your situation,
can you go after both?
Can't afford it. We're the Yankees of the NL. I just doubt that we will. I doubt that we'll go after both. I think we'll be major players for both, and we'll get one.
You have a need for Machado and a place for him, especially with Russell. Like, Cubs fans are probably just like,
no, Russell's gone, dude. There's no way he's coming back.
Okay, so
unless they'll keep him as a backup, he's got no trade value, so maybe they'll be like, hey, he's going to be suspended for 40 games. We'll have him sit on our bench or whatever, but I think they just DFA him, save that money. He's making $2-3 million, so take that money off the books.
You have a Bryce Harper, Chris Bryant connection.
And you have an Elmore Machado connection, but who would you rather make happy, Chris Bryant or Albert Elmore Jr.?
I'd rather make Bryant happy. However, with an injury-prone outfielder who tends to get injured in the outfield, do you want to throw $100 million over 10 years at Bryce Harper and have him jump into brick walls?
No, I would not. But there's one other thing to think about. If the DH happens in 2019, which there are whispers, then I want Harper. But let me back it up. Let's go with Machado. Let's go with Machado right now. Okay. Let's say the Cubs sign Machado. This is my lineup then.
What is the Elmora connection? Is it high school?
They like grew up together. They played like Little League and then high school together. Yeah.
Okay.
They're like a year or two apart, though, but they've known each other since they were kids. They're basically like, they consider themselves cousins. They're not, but they consider it, you know? So I then go, I have, it's tough because Ben Zobrist becomes super utility in this situation. So that's why with leadoff hitter, I'm going to give Albert Elmore Jr. a try batting first. I know he doesn't draw a lot of walks. Actually, I take that back. I don't
batting
have
order is hard.
No, see, now here's where I go then. I go hard. I go really bold then. If I got Manny Machado in my lineup, I'm going Chris Bryant as my leadoff hitter. He's a high on base percentage, works the count real well, and goes from first to third almost better than anyone in the league. Not anyone, but he's a top guy. He's an amazing base runner, one of the best in the league. Okay. So he's my leadoff hitter. Batting second, I am going.
You should go Machado or Hart.
I'm going to go Machado batting second. Third, I'm going Anthony Rizzo.
Yes.
Machado's playing second base because Elmora, that connection is going to convince Machado to play second. I have Anthony Rizzo playing first base. I have Javier Baez, my shortstop, batting cleanup. Fifth, I've got Kyle Schwarber playing left field.
Wait, did you say Machado at second base?
Yeah, moving him to second base. Boy, even though he played, do you know he played a much better defensive shortstop with the Dodgers? I'm not sure if you knew that.
Okay.
Because with the Orioles, he was, I think, rated slightly below average at shortstop.
Can Javi play third and Machado play short?
But at that point, wouldn't you want Machado third? He's won gold gloves there.
Yes,
Machado has made it clear that he wants to play shortstop.
He wants to play short,
My thing is because of the Elmora connection. Fine, whatever. Javi's back to second. Machado's at shortstop. Let's assume that Elmora is not going to be able to convince him to change positions. But whatever. So then I got Machado at short. Rizzo at third. That's your top three. Bryant, Machado. Rizzo at first. I'm sorry. I meant three as batting third.
Batting third. Okay.
Yes, batting third, Rizzo.
So fourth is you're going Javi, right?
Javi Baez is batting fourth for me. I like him as a cleanup hitter. I didn't like him as a three hitter. I think he strikes out a little too much to be a three hitter. I want more contact, especially when people are on base in front of him. And I think Machado's not known as a huge on base guy, but he'll get you a 360 on base percentage, 370, which is very good out of your two hole. And Bryant should be closer to 400. And so you got those two. Then you got Rizzo, who's high on base percentage guy. So you got three big on base percentages guys for Javi Baez, which means you don't need him to be that big of an on base percentage guy, which he's not anyway. He's a 325, 330 OBP. He's fourth, playing second base because we got Machado short. We clarified that. Fifth, I've got left fielder Kyle Schwarber.
Yes.
Sixth, I am going with Albert Elmore Jr. in that spot. Because then I got the righty-lefty thing. And I like Elmora because he's more of a contact guy after Schwarber and Baez, who are heavy strikeout guys. Seventh, I then go Wilson Contreras. And then that I fucked the righty-lefty platoon at that point. And then eighth, I go Jason Hayward, who to me is just looked at for defensive purposes and being a good guy in the clubhouse. Because I'm kind of over – during the wildcard game, I remember watching him take practice. He takes the worst practice swings. He doesn't even look comfortable taking – he's got the ugliest swing in baseball. I know he had a few great games this year where it's like, oh, maybe he's back. Overall, it's still a really weird-looking swing from the lefty. It's disappointing.
It's like he has no wrists.
He's got the yips. He's like a Charles Barkley golf swing where he like hesitates in it. He like does this weird thing. Every now and then he runs into a fastball and that's great. Or he hits flares that just drop in. His line drive, his hard contact rate sucks, I'm sure. And then for pitching, obviously Lester's coming back. Hendricks is back. Hamels, you're picking up that option. I'll get to that in a second. Quintana's back. Darvish, Chatwood, the six. Maybe I looked at him as like your AAA insurance. And if you don't want to go AAA, then we'll just DFA you. Maybe you could figure some stuff out down there. And then Drew Smyly could be your sixth, your swing guy. Montgomery, I think, has more value as a trade candidate. I'd try to trade him for a nice setup man, maybe happen him. I'd try to rebuild the farm system a little bit. Let me go back to Cole Hamels slightly. Sorry I'm talking real fast here, guys, but we're coming up on an hour, and I don't want to go too long with the podcast today. And I want to touch on the AL wild card very briefly. Not a whole lot to talk about because the Yankees keep their ass. Anyhow, sorry, I'm flying. Cole Hamels has a $20 million option. The Cubs pick up. They got all $20 million of that for 1 year. Great value, if you ask me, because pitching's getting expensive. It's only 1 year commitment, blah, blah, blah. But if the Cubs really want to play, you know, hey, we really want to expand, we really want to go for a couple big name free agents here. Cole, would you be interested in a multi-year deal, but less annually? Because get this, the Rangers have to pick up the decline. It's a $20 million option, but if the Cubs decline it, it's $6 million buyout. So you could say to Cole Hamels, we're going to buy you out because it's Texas's money. So you're going to get that $6 million. But then we're going to re-sign you for a two-year deal in which you're going to make $14 million each season. So that's a two-year $28 million deal. Add the $6 million in. Now you're making 2 years $34 million. Or we could do 1 year $20 million. Your call. I think he might say, fuck it, I'll do the two-year thing because it's more money guaranteed overall over two seasons instead of one season $20 million. Right?
I follow that. I need you to make me a flow chart.
Yeah, but
dry erase board.
It's just kind of a clever way of getting the Rangers to pay $6 million to Cole Hamels. That way we could get him under the $20 million hit for this season.
And then every time we get their money, we go, that's for Rafael Palmeiro.
Exactly. And all right. And then, there's your rotation. Rotation set. Bullpen, most guys coming back. I want Chavez back.
Morrow
healthy. They gotta be smart with him. Then Theo mentioned that in the press conference. Strope is a $6 million option. I think that's an easy pickup. Justin Wilson's a free agent. Bye. no, and I think they really just need to just like a little tinkering in the bullpen. I would like to find Andrew Miller's available, but his injuries scare the shit out of me. I think some team will overpay for him.
He's done.
I think he might be done. He's been banged up the last two seasons now, and he's going to be 35, 36. So I think, yeah, so I think they should try to look for, though, another eighth inning type guy, a guy you feel comfortable going against righties or lefties, someone with a high strikeout rate.
What is the I'm not going to think of his name. The Astros picked up a guy at the trade deadline who's worked out like gangbusters for them. There's a lot of like middle relief guys. I want the Cubs bullpen looking like Milwaukee's bullpen.
I do too. I would like it looking like Milwaukee's bullpen. I would like it looking like the Royals from a few years ago.
The Yankees now.
And the Cubs bullpen, again, we mentioned this before, actually did have a great season. You just want one guy. That Josh Hader type guy, the Yankees have a few guys like this. They come in and you just know the other team is freaking out. I mean, Josh Hader is such an impactful guy that the entire game 163, people, they just kept talking about, they got to figure out a way to get the Hader. Get the Hader, get the Hader, get the Hader.
Yeah.
Miller. Yeah. Miller was like that with the Indians there in their 2016 run. Get to Miller, get to Miller, get to Miller. And the Cubs need a guy like that because Morrow is not a multi-inning relief pitcher. He is a one-inning guy. So you want a guy that can go two innings, strike out four guys out of the six batters he faces, four or five, and just go up there and be, and the strikeout guys, I think, are so key in the bullpen because often you bring in, you know, Steve Cishek is a very good pitcher and had a good season. got a little tired at the end because he didn't quite look like as sharp as he did the first 5 months of the season. He looked a little weak there in September, but I was still very happy with C-Sheck. C-Sheck, though, is a ground ball pitcher, which is nice when you bring him in the seventh inning, there's a runner on first base and one out, he gets that double play ball for you. But when you bring him in with runners in second and third with one out, I'm not confident he's going to strike out the next guy. You need that guy that's going to come in there and case some motherfucker, and that way you could get out of that jam. That's where the strikeout guys are huge, especially come playoff time. And Theo acknowledged that. He made that clear. The things he acknowledged, he said, he basically said, I will never be part of an offense like that again. He goes, I've never been part of an offense like that, and I won't be again. That's like a direct quote, meaning what he saw was unacceptable. So you could definitely see some major shakeup there. Me and you were just mentally adding Machado or Harper. Nice thing is if you add Harper, Hayward becomes your center fielder. Maybe he platoons with Almora, or you just trade Almora and you keep Happ as your like utility guy. And then you get Ben Zobrist the everyday second base spot last year of his contract. Defensively, I still think he's okay. Obviously he's not a plus. So either way, we're still thinking it's Harper or Machado, but for all we know, it might be Harper or Machado and they trade for a guy or they sign another guy. Maybe they think, hey, maybe we could get AJ Pollock on a decent deal and he could be our leadoff and center fielder. I know he's not the guy he was 2 years ago.
Right.
Who knows? Like, you know what I mean? There's something like that. And I think they need a backup shortstop, a true backup shortstop. One that's like an actual bench player, a defensive guy.
Besides,
you can't just have Baez.
Besides Kershaw and Machado and Harper, who, off the top of your head, are the other like holy shit type names?
Craig Kimbrell.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of giving 5 years, $90 million, which is what he's going to get to a closer, even though he is fantastic. I'm just not into that.
Yeah.
There's the guy Corbin from the Diamondbacks is a good pitcher. He's probably the next best pitcher after
Kershaw. Patrick Corbin is outstanding.
He's outstanding. Kershaw with the injuries, I don't know if he opts out because it's an opt out for him. It's his choice.
He should stay in LA. What's he thinking?
Because you know what I mean? He's got what, two more? It's a 2 years, $65-70 million. Unless he thinks I'd rather get 5 years from someone, and then in that case, the Dodgers will probably say, "We'll restructure it for you."
Hey, don't worry. We've won the division 100 years in a row.
Yeah. Clay Buchholz is available. I don't know how good he is anymore. I got to look at the starting pitchers more.
I don't want. I would.
Yeah.
Patrick Corbin is interesting to me.
Corbin's very interesting to me, but I just think we have a lot of starters locked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's
we
not
have,
a need.
We have control. Every guy we have control on, unless we decide, hey, we'll trade. We have more value. Quintana's only making $11 million. Maybe we could trade him for a couple prospects because we want to rebuild that farm. And then we could take, you know, we could go then sign Corbin for $22-23 million. I don't know what he's going to get out there. He'll probably get a pretty penny, though. I think like a Drew Pomeroy. There's a few other big names, not big names, but like there's like a few solid number three, number two type starters available. I got to look at the list. My computer died, unfortunately, 10 minutes ago, everyone, so I don't have the list in front of me, which I had. But we could explore the free agent market throughout the whole rest of October, because you and I won't be talking about the Cubs. We'll actually be talking about other teams.
Yeah.
We'll...
So if you're mad, you got 64 minutes of Cubs. Hey, guess what? Not a lot of Cubs to talk about after.
Yeah.
This.
The rest of October, we'll be talking about your Brewers and your Rockies and your Dodgers. As far as we won't go into predictions right now. We'll do another podcast this week in which I guess you could just say who you think. What do you think? We'll do real quick predictions. Oakland A's fans, I'm sorry. There's not much I could say. I just feel bad for you. I always think of Brad Pitt whenever you guys lose. And I just think about the jerks who are like, what is it, Billy Beane's shit work in the postseason? One game, wild card game. It was interesting because they opened with an opener. They had a relief pitcher start the game. It didn't work out, though, because Aaron Judge hit a two-run homer. But Aaron Judge hits two-run homers off of elite guys. So it's not like – I can't even fault him that much for it. My only issue with bullpenning, which I do still think is the future, because, you know, Brian Kenny's a big supporter of it. Not that we follow him blindly, but we do love him. I agree with him on 97 to 98% of things, is that I think you have to almost train it more during the regular season for it to work.
The Brewers are doing it today.
I know they are. So I'm really interested to see that. I think the Brewers win in five. I think Colorado will steal one in Milwaukee because I think that ballpark plays well for their lineup. But I think Milwaukee in five. I think Boston in four, which I know a lot of people are like, no, that shit's going five. And you could even say the Yankees could upset them. I think Cleveland is going to upset the Astros. I like Cleveland winning that series in four. And then I'll give you my, I think, Dodgers over the Braves in five. I think both National League series go five. Now, what say you, Brad? What are your predictions?
That is fucking fascinating to me that we are both taking Cleveland over Houston. That is crazy to me because I thought I was going to be a real douche coming out strong. Do you know who is in the bullpen for them? Trevor Bauer.
I know.
Do you know what their biggest weakness is? The only weakness that I see on that team? Bullpen. What?
Bullpen. And they got Bauer in there.
And they got Bauer in the pen.
Arguably could be the Cy Young.
If you're like Alex Bregman, okay, Jose Ramirez is better. Carlos Correa, okay, Francisco Lindor is better.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that you throw at me with Houston, there's an opposite, if not superior, thing in Cleveland, including the fucking staff. Okay, Verlander, Kluber, game one. Really, who has a clear advantage there? I mean, that I just – so I'm taking the Indians in that series, but I'm showing my work.
You did show your work, and I like that. And also, we'll tweet out your latest blog giving away the final season's awards. We'll tweet that out, and then we'll talk about that throughout, so we don't need to get into that now. But I'll tweet out the link to the article Brido wrote about his MVP, Cy Young, and all that.
I'm going to take Boston over New York. However, I don't feel comfortable with that choice because I think Boston is top-heavy. If Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez are scary, then what are Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton?
Frightening? Being the same word. Yeah.
And then after Sale, I don't like the Red Sox pitching.
I could see that.
I think they're both deep.
Do you like the Yankees pitching, though?
Better. I like Severino. I like Tanaka in the second half. I like Hap. Their bullpen is frightening.
Hap was better than I thought. He transitioned over to the Yankees better than I thought he would have. He's looked good because he was.
So that basically comes down to if Judge, who plays better, Judge or Mookie Betts. I've thought about this, and that's basically what it comes down to for me.
So you like Boston, but in five? Because I got them in four.
I'm gonna go Boston four.
I got Boston and Cleveland both in four, but then the National League, I have Brewers, Dodgers in five.
Those are both complete toss-ups to me.
Yeah, could go either way.
Yes, I think that the Rockies have superior pitching, but like
you know the. So who do you want to win the whole thing? Let's just go to that real quick. I don't want to break down our NLCS and ALCS predictions because we could have a whole podcast about that when we get closer.
I just want to do
for fun. I want to know who you're. Yeah, I heard you say you want just pure chaos, which I'm on board
with
too. Now that I think about it, I want the Cleveland Indians to win the whole thing because they're the last one standing as far as droughts go. And most Indian fans were really cool to me as a Cubs fan after we beat them.
Yeah.
They were saying, you know what, if we're going to lose anyone, I'm glad we lost to you. And I kind of was like, you know what, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
It was one of the greatest worlds. Even if you weren't a fan of either team, it was one of the greatest World Series of all time. I'm okay with Cleveland. I was rooting Oakland A's before that because I love me some A's. But Cleveland will be my dog in this fight going
forward.
The
Yankees and Red Sox can both fuck off.
And I know the Cubs are dangerously close to becoming one of those teams, you know.
Yeah.
When we win the 2019 World Series, it'll be like when the Red Sox won in 04 and 07, and we've won, you know, we're going to be, we'll probably be annoying to the rest of the country at that point. But you know what? Bring it on. I can't wait to be annoying to the rest of the country.
The Indians would make me the happiest out of the American League. Send Chief Wahoo straight to hell.
I know. I was talking about that with Rhea Butcher, a friend of ours. I go, it'd be better if they won next year because that's the last
year. Yeah.
Be better. But then I want the Cubs to win next year. But then Rhea made a point going, if they win it this year with the last year Chief Wahoo, that'll make all the old curmudgeons who are like, we want him back. I think they could accept it better, you know? Like when Albert Pujols left the Cardinals fans were like, well, at least he won a World Series this last year. But by the way, did they dodge a bullet there? Because Albert Pujols is god-awful now. But still, in commercials, Mike can't get Mike Trout in a commercial in Major League Baseball, but anyhow, though. So
National League, I truly don't care. I think that of all the teams, I hate the Braves the least. But an Indians-Braves World Series could cause a few problems in terms of optics.
I like the chaos.
but optics of two Native American teams playing each other, kind of a problem for baseball. So
yeah. I used to never have a problem with Brewers because there was always a friendly little rivalry, but now they've gotten a little getting a little cocky up there. They haven't won shit, and they're already talking shit like they rolled us. They're like, or like we choked. We played 600 ball in September. We did not choke. You guys were just better. You guys were amazing. You caught us. If we're healthy, though, we are, you know, you are in our rear view, my friends. So don't get too high and mighty just yet, Brew Crew. I don't think I would be pissed off if they won, but I'm not ruined for them, that's for sure. So really, I would love the Rockies to prove me wrong and beat the Brewers, and I'd be okay. A Rockies Indians World Series, I'd be very happy with, because the Rockies have never won, and the Indians have won since like 72 years ago or something now. And anyway, though, we'll talk more. Something we'll talk about next week for you guys to look forward to. Someone proposed, I think Jeff Passan or Payson proposed, that's the word I'm looking for, that baseball should do like an all MLB team, the way NBA does an all NBA team and the NFL does like all pro. You know, it's kind of like an all-star team for the end of the season. You know, I like that. Actually, I don't know if people realize this. Way back in the day, there used to be two all-star games, one at the halfway point and then one again at the end of the year. Because there's a lot of, like, Jake Arrieta wasn't an all-star in 2015 when he had that great season. There are guys who don't make the all-star team, but at the end of the year, you're like, this guy was.
Wait. So you want to, it's a name only, or you want to do a Pro Bowl?
Not a Pro Bowl. It's just a name only.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the NFL does a Pro Bowl, but you don't have to do a Pro Bowl. I mean, you could. It'd be fun to have an extra game in November. Why not? But I think it'd be cool to do it, because obviously someone on Yahoo did theirs today, and I think you and I would probably agree with mostly with them, but we might tweak it here or there. This is something we can talk about going forward, I'm saying. I'm just giving people some stuff to look forward to as we break down the playoffs and talk about some other fun shit.
I mean, clearly, you and I can yawn and do an hour. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to run out of shit to talk about in the offseason.
You're right. I just wanted to throw some highlights out there, keep a little structure to the old podcast. All right, Brido, you guys know where to find his podcast. This is his podcast. You know where to find his album. Buy it. Just buy it on iTunes. It's way better for everyone involved if you actually pay for it. You'll feel like a better person. You know, don't you want to do that? Don't you feel like a good person?
Hear what I'm talking about with Irving Park and Cicero. We referenced it earlier. Get to know Joe's neighborhood in my joke.
Absolutely. All right. That's been the podcast. You guys can follow me on, you know, joekilgannon.com, all that other stuff, and on Twitter. Tell your friends about this show. We the more listeners, the happier we are. And the more we care and the better we probably put into it. You know, the more, the more effort we put in.
We'll care more if we think more people are there.
We're like a team. That, you know, you ever have those players where, oh, his team's out of it, so he just plays like shit, but then when his team's in it, he's like killing it. Like Cole Hamels was terrible with Texas. He went over to a winning team, started pitching great because he had more to pitch for. Give us more to pitch for. Tell your mother, tell your father, tell your enemies.
We'll name you listeners eventually. What do you think about you Southpaws out there?
We got to go to work on that. Yeah. All right, that's been Comedians Talking Baseball. Thanks, everybody.